Okay, welcome everyone. This is Open the Pod Bay Doors. I am your host, Ian Gardner. I have a day job with Amazon Web Services looking after the startup ecosystem, and I helped co-found Innovation Bay. Love startups, and that's really why we're here today. I'm delighted to be joined by Catherine McConnell. I almost said O'Connell. McConnell from Bright. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you, Ian. Yeah, fantastic.
Thank
a real
you
pleasure
for
to be here.
Being in the show. So you have an awesome startup that I really want to talk about. What I normally do is just try and get a little bit of background on you as a person and how you ended up wanting to do something as crazy as launch a startup. So do you want to tell us a little bit about you, where you came from, and how you came into this world?
Okay. Corporate background. So I think I'd never really thought about being an entrepreneur.
And but even before that, you were an accountant, weren't you?
Well, Macquarie Bank, so 14 years.
I'm sure I saw accounting on your LinkedIn profile.
I worked for a few years in government as an economist and briefly undergraduate at Count Wealth Accountants.
Ah, cool.
So that's
maybe
where,
that's what it was, right.
Yeah. And I guess when I finished uni, that was always going to be my career path. So it was quite a surprise, I guess, when an idea did pop into my head, and it was something that really, really wouldn't go. It was something that I couldn't progress whilst I was at the bank, and it's crazy to actually think of that process that I went through to resigning. So being at one company for such a long time, 14 years, and being so happy with your team, I still don't understand how it happened. but it did happen, and I did resign, and I did, you know, start off at Stone and Chalk with a blank piece of paper and a laptop. and this idea. So it's crazy now to think back that was nearly 2 years ago.
Right.
And to think we have a real company.
So tell us about your time at Macquarie. I mean, what were you doing?
Okay, so I started in retail banking for a few years, and then I moved over to corporate and asset finance, where I stayed for about 11 years. So corporate and asset finance, I was in sales primarily for operating leases for commercial and government customers. And then I was able to get a specialist focus in energy assets.
Right. So what was a typical customer then, or who were you selling to?
So in the first part of my time there, it would have been a university or Tasmanian government. So the whole of Tasmanian government, they had a panel contract with Macquarie Bank. So helping them instead of pay for their assets up front, just use an operating lease. Not that exciting.
Right.
In the second part, where I got the focus on energy assets, that was quite interesting because I was able to set up some different products for solar installers for their customers to access commercial finance. And then also for some energy retailers for their consumer customers to access a loan to pay for solar.
And these weren't, I mean, it doesn't sound like there's any esoteric derivative style lending in here. This was fairly standard balance sheet interest rate lending.
It was. So it was fairly standard lending. And what we were doing was just looking at, I guess, distribution channels and looking at partners that had some specific needs or, you know, different vendor programs and how you could, you know, look at branding or just solve some pain points and around the distribution. So,
yeah. All right. So let's rewind a little bit then, 3 years, say. So you're at Macquarie. You got a good job. Probably getting paid pretty well. You said you quite enjoyed it. You liked your team. So, I mean, there must have been some sort of, worry that you're missing a trick or that, you know, what was the burning passion that made you want to question that and go and do something else?
So it was in 2015, it was around 2015 when our family got a battery. So we already had some solar and we got a battery. And that was a real turning point for our family. And it sounds a bit crazy, I guess, but I started to...
So, sorry, what year was that? 2015?
2015.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Even talk about that. Like, why did you want a battery?
It's because I was doing energy finance and starting to get exposure to the industry. I was just seeing the technologies that were on the market, starting to understand some software that was around the battery technology. And I could really see that it wasn't going to be 2015, 16, 17, but at some point in the future, it was going to have huge implications for how families generate their own energy, how they access energy. And for me, that was really exciting. It it was something that I started thinking about all the time, and all the opportunities that could be harnessed as a result of this new technology. And I guess that what I was doing and the product that I had at Macquarie, I sincerely felt that that wasn't going to capture this opportunity. And I just started feeling that it was going to be so huge and so big. And that's what kept me awake at night. That's what started making me frustrated that I had to be a part of that opportunity.
And I mean, again, like, you're from Macquarie, so you've got some money. So, I mean, it was probably easier for you to go out and buy a battery than it would be for, you know, someone in a truck driver or a taxi driver in the, you know, inner west to do that. You know, so was that part of what you were thinking about? So talk us about the economics of buying a battery.
Okay. So then we already had some solar. So what I did at that point was I put 2.5 kilowatts more solar on the roof. So I put another, I think I put 10, I had 8 panels, and I put another 10 panels on the roof. We got this LG battery because Tesla weren't around then, and we had to get a new inverter as well. So I think we paid around.
What does the inverter do?
So it converts the energy from an energy that's generated on the solar panels into an energy that you can use in the home. So it was just, this was around $14,000-$15,000. And the payback, so the energy that was going to be generated, you can actually look at the concept of payback and how long does it take for that energy generation and energy that you're storing to pay back the cost of the system. And so the payback was greater than, was about 10 years or a little bit higher than 10 years. So that type of payback does make the system expensive. It's a hard system to sell to the average Australian. When you look at solar on its own, the payback from the energy savings, you can pay back the system in about 3 years.
If you just buy the panels without the battery, yeah, it's 3 years.
Yeah, it's about 3 years.
And is that just because panels are so cheap and efficient now?
The cost has come down so much in the last few years.
And it's maybe worth just talking about that. So, I mean, the difference between just having solar, so when it's sunny, you can run your air conditioner and heat your water and do all that other stuff, but when it's not, you're buggered. Is that kind of?
Yeah. So solar, given for about $5,000, you can get a good system. And most people find that their bill can be decreased. So it'll be a third to a half of what they'd normally get.
But it only works in the old way. When it's sunny.
Yeah. So when it's sunny, when it's cloudy, it's just when it's a rainy grey day, you get hardly any generation.
All right. So the real breakthrough here was the fact that you can now put a battery in and store up that sunniness and then use it in the evening to power your
evening. Right. You can use it during the day. Then when it's cloudy, what you can also do with the battery is you can download energy at night. So if it's cheaper energy for you to access at night when the energy tariff is a lot lower, if you move to a time of use tariff, you can actually download energy for, say, 9 cents when you'd normally pay, 18 to 40 cents during the day. It actually becomes a bit of an arbitrage.
And you can sell this back to the grid or the suppliers, is that right?
You can sell it back to the grid with any excess energy. You can feed that back into the grid, and depending on what your energy retailer will pay you, you may get between 4 to 12 cents.
Is that good?
It's good, but what I'd rather do with the energy that I generate is offset my usage. So when I'd be normally paying 40 cents a kilowatt, I'd rather offset the 40 cents than get 12 cents back.
So how much of this energy buying and selling arbitrage piece are you doing?
So Bright's not involved in the arbitrage. What we're involved in is this uptake. So we're facilitating the uptake. So what we're doing is primarily battery, solar, and energy efficient equipment. So we help a customer to buy what they need today and just pay for it back over time. And so why it suits something like solar and energy efficient product, if there is this concept of a payback, and so the energy savings that you generate over time can pay back the cost of the equipment, our product is really perfectly aligned because they can get it today, pay nothing today, and often you can align the repayments with those energy savings. If your energy bill, you get half of your energy bill, you'd normally pay $500 and you're finding your energy bill is $250. You can often conceptually pay for Bright's repayment plan with those savings from your energy bill.
And how do you differentiate against a more standard lender, whether it's a big commercial one or a society one or a Prospa? I mean, I know they're not focused on this, and it does sound like you've got some niche, but I mean, how are you presenting that?
So our niche is we work with businesses. So we work on the ground with businesses right at the cold front with those businesses that are selling the products. So if you want a product and if you want solar, you might go to three different providers. And so what we are doing is we've trained those providers. We've given them the Bright app. We've given them a tool, and they're able to on the spot do a quote for the customer. They're able to do a finance application in less than 2 minutes. And they can get on-the-spot approval. So in less than 9 seconds, we're able to give them and their customers an instant credit approval. And that's where it's a little bit different, because if you're with a business, you know, and you found a solution and you really want to get this solar on your roof, often that price, so it's $5,000, it's $15,000. And, you know, the first thing you say is, how am I going to pay for it? And so what you do, what families normally do is they think of their credit card. And this is quite a big purchase. So this size might take up the whole of the credit card, and they don't want to do that. They want to save credit cards for discretionary spending. Then they think of a loan or a lease. And then they start to think of, well, what's the interest rate on that loan or lease? It's 9%, 10%, 12%. And so what they do then is they have this process where they say, well, you know, my home loan's only 6%, it's 5%. So why would I put it on a loan or a lease? I may as well just put it on my, you know, home loan offset account. Yeah. So what they do then is they often walk out of the store and they say to the vendor, listen, I'll think about it, you know, and if I do decide to progress, you know, I'll get back to you and I'll pay for it. I'll just get the money out of my home loan account. And so that's a really bad outcome for the vendor, because the vendor 90% of the time has lost that sale. So they need on the spot to be able to solve that problem for the customer. They need to be able to provide a payment solution on the spot. And to date, they haven't had an app that's provided a solution for a 0% interest payment plan. So we're the first in Australia to be able to come to market with an app that does instant credit decisioning for up to $30,000 for terms of up to 5 years. So we're the first there, and it's really providing a solution.
Is that more like Afterpay then? Is that
Afterpay focuses on small end.
Yeah, it's more like
so they go up to $1,000 or so for millennials, right. and they focus on much shorter payment terms, say five fortnightly repayments.
But the concept is broadly similar?
The concept's similar, right. Buy now, pay later. So we're just focusing on...
I mean, that's
on
a huge business though. I mean, they're $500 million, I think.
Yeah, so the potential for Bright is also, you know, is also very, very bright.
Yeah.
You know, that stupid pun, but, you know, solar has been big. It'll continue to be big. There are about 1.7 million families that have solar, yeah. And those families will all be looking to a battery in the years to come. We really see that as a $20 billion market over the next few years.
Just in that solar
just
battery?
Just in the batteries.
All right, so that's a market that's obviously still worth focusing on for now.
Batteries, definitely. And so what we want to do is just be positioned for that opportunity. And then now there are still families that are buying solar and they're getting battery ready. They may not, you know, afford the battery today or conceptually have you know, think it's the right time to buy. But today families are putting more solar on and getting an inverter that's battery ready. And so they're the families we're really helping solve a problem for today. Yeah. And other families are doing other things to their home. So they're getting, you know, double glazing on their windows. You know, they're getting their roof fixed up so they can get the solar put on. So, you know, there are air conditioning, heating and cooling and solar hot water. So all of these customers we're also helping today.
Yeah. All right, just on the business model then, so I'm just trying to work out in my head where the cash is flowing and just how much money you need. Because you look at a company like Prosper, I mean, they raised a lot of money because they have, I mean, it's basically their balance sheet that they're lending against. So is that your model? Are you actually lending the money as well?
We are the lender as well.
Right.
So it has that complexity.
So you're going to need to raise a lot of money.
So there's debt and there's equity.
Okay.
So the largely the first year we made some big decisions in our family and we self-funded it.
Okay.
So we took the kids out of private school and we stopped the cleaner and we stopped the lawnmower, and our edges on our footpath were terrible. We just yeah. I'm not very good with the whippersnipper, but we made some sacrifices as a family, and we self-funded, and then I did a seed raise for $3.5 million. And then I've just done a Series A for $4 million.
Okay.
We've also set up a securitization, so a debt facility, and I'm using that to fund my loans. So in that facility, I've got some high net wealth families. So Grok.
Okay.
Mike's contributed to this debt facility, and I've got other shareholders and other high net wealth parties that have contributed to this this facility.
Yeah, I mean, so Grok is Mike Cannon-Brookes's family office. I mean, I'd maybe talk about that in a moment, but just, I mean, that's a piece that I hadn't read about. So, I mean, you have a, I mean, what does that look like? So are you able to draw down against a sort of asset that these guys have put aside? That
So we've set it up. It's a sophisticated, the business is quite complex underneath. It really is there's a tech platform and there's a marketing solution, but it is also a lending business where we take real asset and credit risk. So we take risk against the businesses, against the consumers. You know, we have a team that does settlements and collections. So it's a, you know, it's quite a solid business. But we, in our debt facility, we've structured it so we have some equity and then we have debt. So if you think of it like getting a home loan and you need to provide a deposit and the rest is funded by the bank. So we've put some equity in and then it's able to be advanced the rest of the account with debt. Right. And over time, we'll be able to access, you know, additional parties to be able to come into to this trust.
And that debt so far is not what you might class as standard, quote marks, institutional debt. This
mezzanine
is private
debt. High net wealth. Yeah. So it's high net wealth. And we'll have some exciting news, you know, over the next year of, you know, other parties that'll be able to assist us.
Because it sounds like as you scale, you're going to need institutional money to come in behind that, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. So
you probably know some people at Macquarie. I'm sure you've been talking to them.
So, you know, we have some great partners that are supporting us develop the plan and the roadmap. And
because it sounds like your background, you know, 14 years at Macquarie and the sectors you were in were just perfect for this.
Yeah,
because this is complicated. I mean, it's unusual that I'll come across a founder that is this sophisticated so early with a business like this.
And that's why that's a barrier to entry.
Yeah.
You know? So the barrier to entry is getting the debt. So we lend up to $30,000. So when you have a loan business that focuses on $1,000, $2,000 smaller term, so, you know, we are focusing on higher value, longer term. So you do need a lot of money to be able to support that. So luckily we're speaking with the right people and, you know, and we have the right people in with us now helping us.
And what metrics do you use to, you know, measure your business or measure success in the business?
Okay, so in the business, I guess some of them are fairly standard for what you'd look at for a lending business. So we look at the you know, the volume of accounts that were originated that month, so the number of customer sales, the number of settlements, so the number of, you know, so you approve a loan and then you actually settle that loan, so you pay the business and you start collecting repayments from the underlying consumer. So we have those two metrics. Another thing that's really important in this business is looking at arrears and delinquencies. So what you have to do is, you know, the money that you lent out, you know, when you do those direct debits and sometimes you might have insufficient funds when you take accounts from a customer. So really lucky, touch wood, that it's only been a year, but we have no losses and arrears, you know, at any given day, they're usually zero. So to date, we have an 89% approval rate as well. So, you know, it's quite interesting that we're not just approving 10% of deals and have no losses. We're actually very commercial. We're approving a very high number of deals and also have, you know, a very good arrears and delinquencies outcome. So we've just got to keep head down and keep working.
I mean, you touched on, you know, you've only been going for a year. I mean, this is a young business. I mean, that's the other remarkable thing here. I mean, you've done more in 2 years than most people do in 10.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you only resigned, is it 2 year anniversary thereabouts?
Yeah, the ABN, I think, was November the 11th. Is that today? What's today?
That's close.
Tomorrow, actually. Yeah. So I should get some cupcakes or something for the office.
Yeah.
I should do that on Monday. Okay, I'll do that.
But you were still working when you registered the business, is that right?
No, I left Macquarie in October. I think at start of October. It might have been the end of September, start of October.
Right.
And then I did an interview with Stone & Chalk, moved in the next day. Yeah. And then my business plan, was writing up my business plan and then, yeah, registered the ABN, got the company name, did my own trademark applications.
And for that first year, like, what was the what did you have to build in order to be you know, functioning as a business?
So my first hire I did then was in December. So a month after the ABN set up. So I hired my head of tech. And that was quite interesting.
Like, let's just touch on that, because like one of the most common questions I ever get asked is from a, you know, non-technical founder, and I'm looking at you because I don't think you're
code.
You know, and the hardest and the most important and the most difficult first hire is that head of tech. So how did you do it?
It wasn't very sophisticated. Actually, before I moved into Stone and Chalk, for like 1 or 2 days, I looked up ShareDesk, a website. So okay. I was in someone's office, and he suggested that, you know, if I needed tech, he had a friend that he knew and I should call him. So anyway, when I decided I needed someone, I called this guy, you know, David, and I said, actually, who's this tech person that you mentioned? And so he said, listen, he's actually over in France at the moment. I'll line up a Skype call. So I had this Skype call with Daniel Givney then, and he was in France on a mountain, and the reception was very bad or something. Yeah. He was on his phone, I think. So then he had to say, stop. I'll drive up to a higher mountain. Just give me 15 minutes. And he drove up to a higher mountain, and, you know, we ended up getting reception. And so we spoke for an hour. Without a tech background, I mean, I thought he was a nice person.
How do you interview a tech founder when you're not tech?
I rely on my gut instinct quite a lot.
Okay.
I think you have to. You know, I think you get to a point. At this point, it was all gut. It was like I left on a gut instinct that this is going to work. I left on a gut that I was going to make huge changes to the family and it was going to work. So it was just gut instinct.
And Daniel's worked out. He's still there?
Unbelievable. He's my now chief product officer. Over that next year, he built our platform. We integrated it in with like a loan management system. He built our vendor app.
Yeah.
And a vendor portal. He's now got 3, 4, 5, 6 others in his team, and we're hiring 3 more developers if anyone would like to contact me.
Shout out
senior developers.
Catherine at bright.com.au. And that's Bright with an E.
With an E.
Gotcha.
Catherine with a K. So the team's definitely growing, but I mean he was just along the way, I have relied on gut instinct and it's done me right 90% of the time. Yeah. You can't get it right all the time. And I guess I'm beginning to accept that 10% of error is not failure. It's just 9 out of 10 ain't bad. Yeah. So it is what it is. And, it works.
Perfection is the enemy of now.
Yeah. So, you know? And that's one of our, you know, so velocity. I think I saw it with Google Photos, but they had this, statement that velocity is greater than accuracy.
Yeah.
And so we've taken that as our own, one of our, in our internal, how we work at Bright, and you know, so let's accept we're going to make mistakes. Yeah. Another one of our you know, ethoses that we live to is, you know, don't keep any scorecards, and so if you're going to move fast, you're going to make mistakes. Yeah. But let's not lay blame. Like, that's it. So we always, you know, but it's guts worked, and yeah. I was able to then hire someone to work with me on the operations and risk, and was then able to get my someone I worked with at Macquarie together for 11 years. So he's come on, Stephen Cole, as my head of credit.
Yeah,
that's worked really well. But yeah, we've got about 34 or so in the team now.
34.
Yeah,
that's great. And so, how many did you hire before you raised that first $3.5 million seed money?
I had 8.
Right. So that must have been a little bit scary, you know, because you had no revenue. And this is all self-funded.
I'd never done pitching.
You've given
before.
Up your big job. Pitched. And you've got probably 200 grand a month going out the door.
Yes.
A little less.
But. Yeah. So, so it was, you know, home loan offset account. You know, we were just drawing down on, not at the offset, actually, it was drawing down on the home. You know, so we were payroll and everything was just, you know, drawing it from this account into the business account. You know, once again, that's what I think is, I'm not a crazy person. I do things and I write lists for everything and I plan everything. So when I look back now, like, I still don't understand how I resigned and how I did this, because to me it doesn't fit my nature and my personality. But we did all this in the hope that it all fit together, you know, it all work, and that I'd be able to get funding. So when I did start that pitching, I wasn't very good at it.
You weren't that bad. I saw you at Heads Over Heels, and was that March or April?
But I'd shut my seed round by then. So.
Right. Okay. Yes. No, it's good. I thought you were good.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Yeah, I actually watched that on YouTube. I think they put it up there.
Oh, good. You seen it?
I haven't watched it since. Right. Not after you do it. I don't like watching myself again.
And how has it worked for the family? I mean, you've mentioned that a few times. So this was a big impact on them. So, I mean, were you also the principal breadwinner?
No, my husband, he was on the board at Woolworths.
Okay.
So Peter McConnell, he amazing supporter. So
oh, great.
What's crazy though is that he actually left his company June last year to start a startup.
So he's in the startup game too.
So his company's called Comtract, C-O-M-M-T-R-A-C-T. I'll plug. So they're a marketplace for communication professionals. So it's linking up companies with contractors who are professionals in communications.
Wow.
So that was probably when it got crazy.
That is crazy.
But by then I had shut my seed round.
Right. Okay.
And then, all right. So and maybe less crazy. And yeah, I think we also just made some decisions in life. So Oscar now is 10 and Rocco is 7.
Yeah.
And I guess we made some decisions that, you know, we wanted to be happy. We wanted to be personally challenged and we wanted our kids to see that in us.
Yeah.
And it's not bad for them to see, you know, mum and dad taking some risks, doing things a little bit unconventionally.
Yeah.
We had thought that we might have more time with them, you know,
really?
But no, absolutely not. That's, you know, absolutely, absolutely not. But yeah, it's great to hear their conversation change.
Right.
You know.
So would you say you're working harder?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. So especially that first year when it was your own money.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of work was done from, you know, 3 till 6 yeah. before the kids got up. Yeah.
So, $3.5 million is a big seed round for Australia. So tell us about that. Like, how did you do it? Why did you pick that number and who did it come from?
Okay. So I picked the number because I was going to allocate part towards the loan book and then and part towards funding 1 year of operational expenses. So I put a model together around who I was going to hire and it was still very lean for that first year of growth. So that's how I got the number. And
roughly, I mean, you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but what was the split between operational and lending?
So I put $2 million towards lending and $1.5 million towards OPEX. So it's still very lean for operational expenses.
It is, but it also implies quite high valuation. I mean, $1.5 million seed round, you know, you'd be looking at 4 to 5-ish in the pre-money.
So it was $3.5 million seed. So
I mean, that's big for a pre-revenue. Were you pre-revenue at that point?
Yeah, we hadn't launched yet.
So how did you do that? So that is a remarkable achievement.
Because I had no concept of what was normal, I guess that gave me a little bit of confidence because I didn't know anything about this industry. Right. That does give you confidence when you're a little bit naive. So, and the other thing was it made sense. Part of it was for assets. So it wasn't in OPEX. It wasn't just going out the door. Like you were buying assets in a business. You know, it wasn't just an idea. So I was able to come across Trevor Allen via a mentoring program at Stone and Chalk. And so he had been a head of corporate advisory at KPMG.
Okay.
He's also on the board of Eclipse. And so they do leasing, so commercial leasing and other commercial finance. So he had an understanding of what I was doing. He came across my profile on this mentor site. So he understood what I was doing and he just had some solar put on his roof. And from a M&A and corporate advisory background, he saw there was a huge, huge opportunity. So he reached out to me and he offered help. So he offered to help me with introducing him to his networks and helping with the pitch and that gave me a lot of confidence at that point. So my pitch started to change a little bit from that point. Just having him come to the presentations with his, you know, high profile friends and make introductions, and he believes in it and he's investing. And it was a really great prelude into my presentation.
Right. So that money, the $3.5 million, was from a bunch of super rich dudes. Mostly dudes, I'm guessing.
So 32 people. There are a few females in there, but 32 people. So we had some private client advisors from Morgan's.
Yeah.
So they came on and some of their clients came on. And then some of my contacts through my, you know, husband's friends and you know, we accepted amounts from you know, $50,000 up to, you know, $850,000. Yeah. I was just going to take it all. And that's why there were 32 shareholders,
yeah,
plus ourselves, 33 on the registry at that point. So,
all right, cool. And so maybe this is a good point just to talk about that second round. So, I mean, Grok and Mike Cannon Brooks, I mean, most people I think that are listening to this know that Mike is a prolific investor. I think he said he's up to nine figures. So he's putting, you know, he's put over 100 million and I think even approaching 10 figures at one point, I think he was talking about. So how did you get in his field of vision and get him interested in investing?
Okay. So Jeremy Kwong Law, yep, who looks after the investment vehicle, Grok.
Yep. I'm trying to get him in the show.
Yeah, so
you're first.
Yeah, so it'd be great to, you know, get him on. And I had been introduced to him previously. He had worked at Macquarie. So when I, you know, resigned, people were saying, you should meet this person and you should meet this person. And so he was someone that I met in 2015. It wasn't until 2016 when I'd closed the seed round that he started working for Grok. So we got in contact again and he was, you know, saying that they were looking for different investment opportunities. And so they at that point had missed out on the seed round, but we contemplated that, you know, in the future for the next round, there might be an opportunity. So we just started talking and started explaining the business and what I was building. And, you know, he'd come back with different questions or, you know, requests for more information. And so what was really great was just a few months later that they gave an indication that they'd be keen to support us in the debt, yeah, of the business, but they also wanted to get access to equity in the business. Yeah. So that was a, you know, it was a really fantastic conversation and that's where it progressed from December 2016.
And at what point did you meet Mike?
So I met Mike this year, maybe, not sure if it's about May or
so the investment was made before he'd met you?
The debt investment.
Okay.
Yeah. So the debt investment was made and then they had a right to subscribe to equity. Yeah. So met with Mike.
Yep.
And then we agreed on the valuation and we actually raised some money from existing shareholders. And then the majority of it came from Mike, from Grok.
That's awesome. And is he active in any way or?
So I've met with Mike, you know, on occasion since our first meeting. So he's offered to be there to assist you know, with any, you know, insights or experiences that he's learned that, yeah, that may you know, assist with my journey. And so you know, very just honored, I guess, and really lucky to be able to have access to someone who's so formidable, I guess, and so experienced. But Jeremy sits on the board, and Jeremy is available daily.
Right.
So, and as you know, he's you know, experienced with what he sees in the Grok portfolio of companies and just other companies and people that he comes across. So I don't get the time to do that. So it's great to be able to pick his brain,
yeah,
and have his contribution at the board level,
yeah,
as well.
That's cool. All right, so a glimpse at the future. I mean, what does Bright look like in, I don't know, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years?
There are lots of it's early days for us. So what our key focus is just really reducing the friction on our platform. So there's two sides. So we've got the interaction with the businesses. So we're trying to make Bright their, you know, preeminent way to pay. So when they're offering a solution to their customers, we want to be, you know, they offer, you know, pay with Brights, you know, it's $100 a fortnight. So in every part of our interaction with that vendor, we want to just make it easier for the vendor and just give back to them and offer them tools and services that really increase their sales. Because when they sell more with Bright, well, then that's when we're successful. So we've got this really unique alliance with our vendors. On the other side of it, consumers, when they buy using Bright, it's not just a single shot. So they set up a facility with Bright that actually can be reused again and again. So they can use Bright today for solar, but they might pay for their batteries tomorrow. So it's that same, you know, they download the Bright app and they can use this again and again. So that's part that we haven't to date, we haven't been working on that side of the equation. And I think in the future, that's where we're really going to start to put a lot of focus into speaking directly to our consumer customers.
Yeah. And I mean, you probably heard this too, but I heard Mike talk about this concept of local maximums. You know, and it's basically the question is, when do we expand? You know, whether it's into new business areas or new geographies. I mean, have you thought about that? I mean, are you going to go international or start lending against Cut for Cars? Or, I mean, what's the thinking?
So the plan now is to be focused. So, you know, often I've been tempted in the past to think of, you know, moving outside of, you know, home energy, home improvements. But at its core, it's a big enough market for us to focus on and to solve for.
And we're still talking Australia?
So our focus today is absolutely 100% Australia. I think it'd be hard to deny that, you know, in 2019, there's going to be a flip in, Southeast Asia. So the Asian countries are going to have more middle-class people in them than North America and Europe. So everything's going to turn. What's going to be interesting in those countries is as the families start to get more money, one of the first things they're going to buy is an air conditioner because right. It's so hot.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to deny that. It's in my head.
Yeah.
You know, so, our back office is in Manila. So we have 9 there and we're just hiring 2 more. So we'll have 11 people there next week. So we're over there every 2 months.
Yeah.
And it's hard to deny the opportunity that's there in Asia. We're focused 100% here today. But I think there are lots of, you know, exciting expansion opportunities down the track.
So I wouldn't mind touching on your thoughts in the startup community. So you are, I mean, you mentioned Stone and Chalk, so you decided on that. So we'll maybe start with that. So like, okay. Why did you pick Stone and Chalk and how's it been?
I mean, once again, I was at a website, Macquarie actually, you know, where do I work? Didn't want to work at home, used to being in the city. So I saw Stone and Chalk. Just Googled it up and saw, you know, that looks good. So it was, once again, just didn't look really anywhere else, went there and they accepted me. So that's where we started. And, you know, I progressed from a single desk to a little office to, you know, their biggest office there that fits 11.
Yeah.
And then I was really lucky to meet someone who worked at RBS and they were ending their tenancy at Aurora Place on 88 Phillip Street. So we were able to arrange, a fantastic sublease.
Okay. So you've moved out of Stone and Chalk now?
Yeah, so we moved out of – we moved to Aurora Place in like March – yeah, February or March this year. But we're about to – it was only a sublease till the end of November.
Right.
So in a few weeks, we're actually moving into our own tenancy on 56 Pitt Street. So Royal Exchange. Pitt. It's like corner of Pitt and Bridge.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
What is that, an old building or a new one?
So it's just – oh. Yeah, it's got GGs at the bottom, you know.
Yeah.
So it's
you could have a good cafe at the bottom of your building.
It's got a good cafe.
It's a good location down there.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So it's close to the train, the ferry. You know, it's got some good lunch spots.
But I mean, the community aspect. I mean, you're going to miss that, do you think, or is that less important now that you're 30 plus people?
So we have an intro. So we have a community within ourselves, you know, within our own business, and then. We're very busy with the communities we're creating with our customers and with our vendors, you know, and we've got staff, BDM staff in each state as well. So we've got, you know, people interstate now. So we do try actively. So people within the team that worked at Stone and Chalk are still involved in those Stone and Chalk networks and communities, right. And they go back for presentations. You also find that there are a lot of conferences and there are a lot of, you know, panels and, you know, different sessions.
Yeah.
So we all try to participate in those where we can just to stay networked.
Yeah. And Heads Over Heels, I mean, that's when I first came across you. I mean, tell us about that group and how that's helped you.
Yeah, so Gazelay, I'd met from Heads Over Heels and, you know, that was a fantastic opportunity there. It's a very, I think it's quite prestigious and the people who are involved with the group and the supporters that they have. So, you know, being able to present and the different offers that were made to me and I was able to follow up on. So it was still early in our business. We were only 6 or so months old. So we're still, you know, following up on different partner opportunities there. And hopefully we can announce some different partnerships over the next, you know, over 2018, I guess.
Okay. But I mean, what tangible things came out of your heads over heels interaction?
Yeah, so we got different introductions to, you know, so different companies. We are progressing. So some of them are, you know, various stages of different contracts or, you know, development. So,
and when you're talking, so these are introductions made from people at the event?
Yeah, so people at the event. So so some of them are around distribution opportunities. So we're working through just putting some arrangements around those. Others were around funding. So, you know, potential around debt funding partners.
Yeah. I mean, heads over heels. I mean, maybe some of the listeners don't know heads over heels. I mean, I think it's a great model. I mean, I came from Innovation Bay where we ran angel dinners for years, and it's quite one dimensional. It's like come and raise money, and that was kind of the objective. And then we started going to heads over heels, and it's so much more about helping based on specific asks. So, and one of the asks could be, I'm raising money and I need cash, but often it's more, I need introductions to, you know, pool equipment suppliers or Woolworths or whoever it might be. And I think it's a really effective mechanism. And most of the people I know that have come out of heads over heels are really positive about that and the network in there.
Yeah. I mean, one of the asks I had was around introductions to different distribution channels. So different vendors, different retailers. I definitely got that. And so we're at this stage of, you know, forming different partnerships with those parties.
All right. So I've got maybe one or two more questions and then we'll jump to the quick fire round. So we haven't really talked about tech, and I promise we wouldn't go deep and we won't, but I mean, 34 people, about 10 of them developers,
yeah,
is that about
that's
right?
It. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is that is quite a heavy tech business. So, what are they doing? Like, what is the secret tech or the tech that is underpinning the business?
So when I set this up, I wanted it to be digital. I wanted it to be paperless. I wanted it to be fast and easy. So that's tech. I knew the outcome. I knew what it looked like and how I wanted it to work, but I didn't understand how it had to be put together. And I'm still not an expert in that. I learn more and more, you know, the way that developers think, that they, you know, the agile approach and how it's not very hierarchical. And to me, it's just unbelievable. So yeah. I just think it's amazing that I get exposure to these people who think so differently to me. And so that's really helped me broaden how I think about things. Tech, we've developed a platform that it's a security platform, I guess. So it looks at a lot of fraud. It looks at risk assessment of businesses, of customers. It interacts with external parties such as VEDA, such as with our banking partner. It does checks on identity. I guess there are quite a few different features that we look at in our credit report card, so where we go out to third parties. And it's all the platform's been developed in-house. The external interactions with our businesses, they have access to a vendor portal where they can manage their quotes, their loan applications, any supporting documents, and just get different tools and resources from us. And then they also get an app, so they're able to provide quotes, provide loan applications, manage the status of different loan applications, and submit any supporting documents that may be needed.
Yeah.
So it's all been, you know, it's all been built, it's all working. You know, we're continually doing upgrades and releases, and we've got some exciting new developments that are coming on the consumer side over the next few weeks.
Okay. And do your dev team ever talk about artificial intelligence or machine learning? I mean, what are you doing in that area?
Yes.
Again, not wanting to get too deep if you don't want to. But.
No. So one of the things, I mean, you know, with Grok's involvement, they really have challenged us to, you know, are we a lending business or are we a fintech? So is technology at the core of what we're doing? And so it is at the forefront of everything that we're thinking and everything that we're doing. So, you know, so our head of credit, you know, we've all come from traditional backgrounds, but everything we're doing is looking around automation. So what we'll be able to do in a few weeks is for a certain class of loans, we'll be able to have a loan application made, approved, and settled without someone touching it. So we're using AI machine learning, and so different checks that we're doing that people are doing, we're currently in the process of just verifying and but we'll be able to turn that on shortly.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
So I don't know if that's been done before in Australia, but I think it's quite amazing to think that, you've created a platform that you can wake up in the morning and you've had loans applied, they've been approved, potentially settled, and, you know, you're starting to do direct debits from their account automatically.
We talk about this a lot with our customers and even the way that we think internally. I mean, this concept of how to scale your business without necessarily employing hundreds more people, you know, and technology is such a great enabler for that. You know, so it's great to hear that you're focused on that.
Yeah, it's really important. I think because we've come from traditional businesses, we all have frustrations around what didn't work there. And this is everyone's opportunity to make a difference and to do things differently. So I think everyone in the team's really excited about that opportunity.
Yeah. Did I read somewhere that Mike Cannon-Brookes was a customer before he invested? Is that true? Maybe it wasn't.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because I scratched my head on it. So I'm sure Mike doesn't need to borrow money to buy some solar.
I've had, meeting with different people where you meet different, you know, banks and everything. And, you know, I was told yesterday that you know, this bank CEO actually has applied to work with Bright, you know, applied to use Bright.
Right.
I've got to go back and check if we approved them.
So. Maybe his yacht's, you know, getting expensive and he needs a new one. All right, look, I'm kind of exhausted my questions here. That was awesome. I knew you had a great business, but it's way more impressive than I think I expected. So well done.
Thank you.
I got to say, so. I mean, this is a remarkable story to get this far so soon. So if there's anything we can help with, and I'm sure this goes for the whole community, just let me or us know. Do you want to jump into the quickfire round? I did email you the questions about 10 minutes to go, so I'm sure you've got some notes on it. So, do you have a book recommendation? What should we be reading?
It's not a new book, but David and Goliath, Malcolm Gladwell.
Okay.
So that helped me when I was doing my business plan. It was something that I read and actually quoted in the business plan. And
is that a novel?
It's He says it's about underdogs, misfits, and the art of battling giants. And it really gave me a lot of inspiration. It's about how, you know, the biblical story, David and Goliath, and everyone thought when Goliath came out that he was going to win.
Yeah.
But, you know, David used an unsophisticated and unexpected form of battle. He didn't have the traditional armor, so the weight of, you know, legacy systems and legacy businesses and hundreds of people and processes. And so, you know, he came out to battle with a really untraditional method and just spun this rock and, you know, and won this battle. And it gave me a lot of courage, I guess, because I thought, you know, here I am with this crazy dream, you know, and but, you know, I can do it. Yeah. You know, I can do it.
And that's not the book that you mentioned before we switched it on and made you fall asleep.
The book was Soul Mountain, actually. I asked my husband and he said, oh, don't you remember Soul Mountain? It sat by my bed for 2 years. Every time I'd read it, I'd fall asleep.
I don't think
I ever finished Soul Mountain.
Favorite podcast?
So I'm not big into podcasts, but the only one that I do get is the Andreessen Horowitz.
Yeah.
And so that's the only one that I'll look at every now and then when I get the email.
I think we've had about 80% hit rate with that one. It's really,
really
good. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have any others. Yeah, that
well, you
I
should
can
put this one on.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I
will for now.
More subscribers. All right, cool. Favorite news source, or what do you rely on for news?
I just look at Twitter and I just look at SMH, really. So I'm not, you know, there's probably better answers for that one. So lately I'm using Twitter more. I think it seems to be more up to date.
Oh, cool.
You know, when an event happens, yeah.
All right, we'll let that one pass. Do you have a favorite app?
Bright,
the obviously.
Bright app, yeah. I was going to say, actually. Yeah, Bright Pay.
All right. Any others? What's on your phone? Like, are you an Uber user?
Oh, yeah, I use Uber. I use Uber Deliveroo.
Yeah.
This links into my favorite gadget question.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, let's roll on to that.
So I just got some new scales, which is a terrible thing to talk about, but they're these.
Does it automatically tweet your weight every morning?
Quardio, I think it's based to Q-A-R-D-O. And so it's wireless Bluetooth.
Yeah.
And so you get on the scales, you know, you weigh yourself and it shoots it to your phone. It gives you, you know, goals and forecasts, how you're tracking, BMI, fat.
Right.
It's amazing. So I've got the app on my phone. That's the one that I've been looking at. It's been disappointing me every day. So I use Kayak, Headspace.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so there's different.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I keep trying to do Headspace, but I just haven't, you know, it's a terrible excuse. I just can't find the time.
So they've got some quick ones.
Yeah,
you
know,
minute ones
really
on the way
it.
Home.
Next one is tech CEO.
So I've started reading Elon Musk's novel a little bit late, and he is inspirational, right. Not just because of the energy and wearing energy, but he's just such a complex personality that is doing amazing things that are in uncharted territories, uncharted waters.
It's pretty extraordinary.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I think it's really unbelievable.
Really common answer. Yeah. I thought you'd have said Mike Cannon Brooks.
Well, I don't want to look like I'm crawling or something. Yeah, I know. I should have said that, you know, your AWS podcast as well. So, you know, I've got to, you know, there's a fine line, isn't there?
Yeah, no, that's fine. TV show, do you watch any telly?
I don't watch much telly actually, but I am watching that Crown Netflix series.
Oh yeah,
you like it? Strong women. I like strong female role models.
Good.
So
yeah, good. Cool. Gadget we've covered. I think that's it. So the last one was, if you're going to do a TED talk on a specific topic, what would you talk about?
Okay, so I did plan this on the way over. So I'd call it One Match. And so it's from it's a song that my 7-year-old did a dance to at school. So it's that fight song by Rachel Platten. And it says, you know, I may only have one match, but I can make an explosion. And so it's more about like self-belief. It's more about, I think, you know, that journey that I went through when I left and, you know, different moments when I should have just turned back and not gone on. But, you know, so I think you get one chance, you have one match, and then, you know, maybe, just maybe, you can make an explosion and do something amazing that inspires people. And so I think,
one
match about self-belief. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, I think we are done. So thank you. Look, thank you so much. I know you're very busy, and I really appreciate you carving out some time and coming down here, despite our little room juggle.
It's a pleasure to see the offices here, actually, at Amazon. This is where it's all going to happen.
Apparently.
Yeah.
We ended up getting not getting the meeting room we wanted because it was full of about 40 people, I think. Yeah. So I was kind of a bit reluctant to say, I booked this room.
Yeah.
So if the audio is a little bit echoey, then that's the reason. Anyway, that's it. We'll be back next week with another one. So, but yeah, that was awesome. Really enjoyed that. Thanks, Catherine.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks, Ian.